And welcome to the podcast. Tonight, I'm meeting with Ted Hodgins. Ted's another old friend, fellow TEK alumni from Bloomsburg. Been wanting to sit down with Ted for some time. He and I go back, obviously, a long way. And he's actually the guy that put me up to this to start this podcast. So kudos to Ted and many thanks for your inspiration and guidance along the way so far. I think there's a lot more to accomplish, so I know Ted's going to be involved behind the scenes and help me get this thing going. Ted, the reason for wanting to sit down with Ted was his experience as a advisor for the last 6 years over up at Bloomsburg, and that took a lot of time and commitment coming from Philadelphia, for those who don't know, up to a school like Bloomsburg. It's a 2.5-hour, 2-hour drive, give or take, and there's a lot of time there, and Ted's had some good reasons to get up there. His three children all went to Bloom. And I guess some nieces or nephews as well. So it's been a kind of a way for him to connect with his kids, but also with the community. And he was also selected to be one of several members of a multi-member team. Some were alumni and others were outside of that realm to select the new president of Bloomsburg University. I mean, that's an amazing honor. So we get to talk about that, a little bit about his kids and their swimming prowess, and some of his photographic work, which he does as a hobby. And we just sat down, had a great time. So here's Ted Hodgins. Enjoy. Hello, 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 and welcome to another episode of Not Your Average Amigos. Today, I have the distinct pleasure to be sitting across from my good friend, and again, another fraternity brother. Sorry for those who are getting tired of hearing from all these guys from TKE, the one and only Ted Hodgins. And we are here today at a location undisclosed in Center City, Philadelphia, in one of the tallest buildings on the East Coast. And I'll leave it at that. So there you go. Welcome, Ted.
Well, thanks, Chuck. I love the hello, hello, hello. That's my favorite part. Great introduction.
I'm trying to not steal too much from other places. You might be able to connect the dots on some of this and say, where'd you get that from? But so today, what I want, I'm really appreciate you having the time, taking the time to sit down from your busy schedule. I really wanted to get together. Ted, by the way, for those who are paying attention, is sort of my, I won't say the word muse would sound weird, but he is the inspiration or the guy that is the tipping point for getting to where we are right now. And I know will continue to be extremely important to the success going forward, because in the end, we're trying to spotlight people like Ted who have had amazing backgrounds in their personal and professional lives. A lot of these folks are going to come from my background and Ted's from our experience with Bloomsburg University here in Pennsylvania, people here in the Delaware Valley. And Ted just mentioned some people before we got on recording. Just already fed me a couple new folks I could be speaking with, and I want Ted involved with that and helping to build this podcast going forward. So many, many thanks. People who've probably heard me mention this will go, oh, who's brilliant idea was this to do a podcast?
I'm sorry that I talked you into it now.
Well, it was, I think if I remember correctly, it was right before Christmas, dinner at Davio's down in here in Philly. And I just, again, light bulb went off. I mean, we should do a podcast. I think what's going to happen, we'll get some a group together and do this in mass, maybe have this, original group. So, but Ted, the thing that, it really caught my eye, or really inspired me to talk with you, was a couple things. And one in particular, And we'll talk about a bunch of things. But one in particular was your work with Bloomsburg University. And people should know this. You know, people volunteer in their personal lives to support a school like Bloomsburg, State University, alma mater. And you have children.
Yes.
Who went to Bloomsburg, which was a nice, I kind of realized, a nice excuse for dad to go visit the kids.
It worked out well.
But tell me more about that, because I mean, I think people, you know, people who know you or know the school, but understand that it's not close. It's not like it's next door, and you're getting in your car and driving up there. So I mean, I don't know how many times a year. So tell me more about the position you finished up with this.
Yes.
So tell me how that started.
Sure.
And your experiences, and you know, what you got out of that.
Absolutely, and thanks for taking the time here, and I'm glad you've finally went out and bought all this equipment. I know that was the starting point. Chuck kept always talked about wanting to do this. And I finally said, well, I think you have the means and I think you have the time, buy the equipment and then you'll
make it happen. Uh-huh.
And so then I wasn't sure if you were going to actually go through with it. And then boom, he sent me this picture. He had bought the stuff, and I'm like, wow, he's ready to go.
Go to the website, www.notyouraverageamigos, like you've used www.com, and that's that photo at my kitchen table. That same photo could be taken where we are right now, but for anonymity reasons and for security purposes, we will not photograph this session right now. So tell me more. I want to know more about the work you did with Bloom, because I think it's a huge commitment, and it's a selfless act. To give back, because that wasn't paid.
No. So what Chuck is referring to is the Alumni Board of Directors at Bloomsburg University. It's a volunteer organization that are alums. It's about 20 to 24 alums from different walks of life, different backgrounds, different majors, different graduation years. And they really represent the university, or they represent the alumni base to the university, as far as organizing events, interacting with students, and how can we give back to the mission of the university, which is education, as well as looking at some opportunities to fundraise, identifying potential donors to the university. But primarily, it's a lot of interacting with students and being a voice of the alumni in university affairs. So how I got involved in that, and I served 6 years on that board, which is, again, a volunteer position, about 20 to 24 at any given time. And I served 6 years is the maximum you can serve at one time, because the idea is they want to get new people in and out of the system, so you're not having the same old voices, the same old people all the time. So I served a six-year term. And how I got involved in that is, and we moved back to Pennsylvania in 2000, about 17 years ago. We were away, my wife and I, for about 10 years in Northern Virginia. And so excited to get back to Pennsylvania. And I was talking to one of my wife's sorority sisters, Alana Albus. I don't know if you remember her. She's an ASA sister.
Oh, yeah.
Alpha Sigma Alpha. Yep. She's a little bit older than us. And I noticed that she was on the board. I think I read in the Alumni Association magazine, and I saw Alana at a holiday party. And I said, Alana, talk to me about this alumni board. You know, what's involved in that? And she spelled it out to me. And then I realized, if you talk about the alumni board, ask a question about the alumni board. And she looked at me. She says, it's too late. You asked a question.
You're in.
Exactly. And I was like, oh, I'm interested in that. Oh, no. You're already, we're taking care of that. So, but there's an application process. I had to apply and was evaluated and interviewed and that sort of thing. But they want to make sure you're serious about the commitment and you're in it for the right reasons. You're not in there to sell Amway. You're not in there to sell products and services. You're really there. You're giving back for the right reasons. And so, I joined the alumni board. Again, organized a lot of events to work with students directly, one-on-one, for career mentorship, introductions to students, kind of placing them, connecting them with other alums that were in like majors. I'm a mass communication major, but I was meeting with accounting reps. But where I work, we have accountants. So I'm like, hey, you know, it's just connecting students with those opportunities, and also working with the faculty and staff. to talk with their classrooms. And a lot of them are in academia, the world of academia, all the time. So here's an opportunity to speak with somebody or talk with somebody or a group of alumni who are actually in the working world. Nothing against the fine folks in the academic world, but it's just a reality check, and they certainly enjoyed that and encouraged that. So again, opportunity to speak to students, talk about opportunities, talk about experiences, talk about career paths, and the careers that are available today are not necessarily the careers that were available 10, 20 years ago, or even 5 years ago when these mm-hmm. students started their career paths, or their career paths that they think they're going to be on. The trajectories are going to change and how you're prepared for that sort of thing. So we met with the president. The president of the university would come and speak with us, Dr. Saltz, the University Advancement Office, University Archive, Student Affairs. It was a great way to kind of get reconnected with the university. And also, as you know, I used to, Chuck, you mentioned that, you know, I don't get anything out of it. Well, actually, it was some of it was I didn't anticipate I would get anything out of it. Mm-hmm. I had three high school students at the time, and they also had friends who were thinking about going to Bloomsburg University or any other university and college. And at the time, there was an economic downturn, and the requirements to get into Bloomsburg University or any state school at the time that you and I went was a little different than in the year 2000, 2006. Students and family who could ordinarily afford to send their students, their children, to Ivy League schools or some of the private institutions, all of a sudden didn't have the funds or didn't have as much money. And so a state school like Bloomsburg or Kutztown or Westchester is a much better value for the dollar. And so now I realize that my students and students that I knew are now competing in a much bigger, more aggressive pond than you and I had to compete in at that time. It was a really big eye-opener when I saw the statistics. And it was great for university because they had a better student. Mm-hmm. They had a better selection of students. But I was really concerned about folks like you and I mm-hmm. and folks in my household that may have been on the bubble.
Yeah,
and all of a sudden, I'm like, the bubble has moved over to the right a little bit, and the average SAT scores, ACT scores, and average GPAs were higher than they had ever been at the time. And, you know, selfishly, I was like, I ran home with that information. I was like, oh, my goodness. I go, you guys got to get your act together. And not just for them, but for their friends and other people who had seen their older brothers and sisters be average students,
yep.
get into a school like Bloomsburg, and life went on. And I'm like, that's not the same anymore. I go, it's really competitive. Again, great for the school, great for an institution. As an alum, it was really awesome. As a parent, I was like, wow, I need to bring this information back, spread it around to as many people as possible who are thinking about this is going to be, you know, an easy choice or an easy way to go to a state school like Bloomsburg. And so that was extremely valuable information, and hearing it firsthand from the university team and seeing the statistics, and I was like, wow, this is really, really interesting. So was able to share that information with as many people as possible.
How does, now, you said 2006. Mm-hmm. That was the year that you started on the alumni board?
Oh, my goodness. I'm trying to remember. It must have been 06 or 07. Yeah.
So how many years did you serve?
6 years.
Okay. That was the thing. It was funny because I was talking, my mother-in-law, deaconess at her church, and it was supposed to be for a stint. Then they couldn't find someone to replace her. So I thought, you know, she's telling me how she's burned out. I go, burned out of what? She goes, well, I've been doing this for like 7 years. It's supposed to be a 2-year stint. Like, you kind of think like maybe you could have come and gone, or maybe they're fond of replacement, or you could have said, listen, I'm done. Were you anticipating doing this for that period of time, or was it something that kind of took a life of its own? You said, I want to stay on.
No,
as long as I
kind of went into it knowing that I would probably fill out the full 6 years.
So it is a six. They are looking for.
No. I mean, they're always looking for as long of a commitment as anyone would give.
Okay.
It's a 2-year or a 3-year term. I don't remember now. I think it's a 2-year term. Yes, 2-year term, because you can do 3 2-year terms.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah. And you can come. You can go back after you sit a year out. You have to reapply and do something. But I'm not interested in doing that right now. I've got some other things going on. But I kind of knew because of the ages that my children were and the fact that I would be up on campus, they would be up on campus. There's an opportunity to meet with them, see them, interact with some professors that I had at the time that I recalled, some faculty members that I recalled. So I enjoyed that opportunity and that time and that space, and was able to kind of make it work in both ways.
Wait, no, the age on your children. Your oldest is your daughter?
My daughter's the middle. So
you have a son that's the oldest.
I have two boys and a girl in the middle.
Okay. So in 06, your son, the oldest.
I'm going to have to remember all this now. It might have been even later than that.
Okay. Maybe it's a little bit later. So let's go back. But what year did your son start? So how much overlap was there? Because you had three kids.
Yeah.
Your youngest just graduated.
Like
a few weeks ago. Yeah. I was watching the posts that you put on Facebook and Instagram. And I followed, by the way, if anybody wants to go out onto Instagram and get a sense of some interesting things that Ted posts, you should get a sense for his disdain for people who do not know how to park properly. So I just parked this parking lot down the street here from where we're recording, and I made sure I parked perfectly. I don't want, someone like Ted to come out and throw daggers, take a photo and post it. But we saw the photos of your son's graduation. So between the three children, how many years total at Bloomsburg between the three?
Oh, my goodness. So, I have to do the math on that because not all of them went there the traditional way.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
They all community college,
ended up
maybe?
There. No. So my oldest son was probably a junior in high school when I joined the alumni board.
Okay.
And he ended up at East Stroudsburg for a semester, then came home and did community college, and then reapplied, got his act together, got his life ambition in focus, and applied as a transfer student to Bloomsburg and joined there his junior year.
So of the three, not to have you sit here and sort them out and say,
but I've got add up the times.
Well, adding the time, but also you mentioned something interesting now because I just read an article. My nephews just did. Well, they did this. Now they spent 8 years in college, not continuously. Mm-hmm. One, they took a little time off, but they started in community college. Had no idea what they wanted to do, but they had an idea, a basic idea, environmental science, where they wound up. They had to change majors, but with the idea that Bloomsburg is still affordable, with the idea that. And being accessible, this is a very good point. You had three children. You had to deal with the idea of you're not going to bankrupt your children, but you had a son who sounds a lot like mine. Your oldest, I think the first child, suffers from the fact they have no one to model themselves after. They have to kind of be the alpha and go and start and do all this stuff. So interesting because, making that, like you said, make the decision to get the act together and go back to Bloomsburg. So he would have been there for how many years once he went to Bloomsburg?
He went there for 2 years.
For 2 years. Mm-hmm. Okay. What's he doing now?
He's an exercise physiologist here in Center City, Philadelphia.
Excellent. Because right now I was talking to someone in physical therapy, and supposedly, because they keep changing the benchmarks, the gold standard now is getting a doctorate in physical therapy. I'm like, what? We remember a guy, Mike Graves. He was one of our fraternity brothers. He got his degree in physical therapy, came out of Bloomsburg, went to Jefferson, and now is in Florida doing very well. But the fact that your son's doing that kind of work, he's probably ahead of the right now, getting in while the getting's good. Mm-hmm. So he's been out of school for how long?
He graduated a year ago.
Okay. Yep. And now he's doing work in exercise physiology. Yep.
And he got that job through a fraternity brother of ours.
Who?
Tom Herpin. He's a younger guy.
After we graduated.
From the our annual fraternity golf outing.
Kidding
he
me.
He had posted in the Bloomsburg University Greek Alumni Facebook page that he was looking, his firm, his facility was looking for Bloomsburg University graduates who had.
Specifically.
Because they liked the background that Tom had.
Tom came into this organization.
They liked his education, his background, and his. The way that he was taught and the way that he did procedures. And so they asked him specifically if he knew anyone. And so he put it out on the Facebook page, of which you and I are members. My son is not a Greek alumni, but, I said, hey, Tom, my son just graduated and he went to Florida for a while and came back in January. And that's when they were looking for the position. I think my son interviewed, with them on like January 3rd and was hired on January 8th.
Wow.
And now actually full cycle, they've asked both Jim and Tom, they're looking for additional folks who are Bloomsburg, who went through the Bloomsburg program.
And so is your younger son also an exercise physician?
No, my daughter.
Your daughter is.
And actually talked about DPT. She's in the DPT program at Temple for physical therapy.
Wow.
So she's an exercise science major as well. And what was neat about them, the two oldest, my daughter is the middle child, is because my son was a year behind and my daughter was on schedule, they both graduated on the same day.
Okay,
at the same ceremony.
I saw those pictures and I'm like, this is insane.
Yeah, and their names were in the program, and my daughter, because her name begins with C, her name actually came first in the program, so she likes to always remind him of that.
Rub it in.
She's like, I actually graduated before you.
No sibling rivalry ruts. So she's here in Philadelphia.
She's here in Philadelphia at Temple.
We're going to school.
Going to school for her DPT, which is doctorate in physical therapy. And then my younger son, who just graduated from Bloomsburg, he is a history major, political science major. He's going back to school for his teaching certification. His goal is to teach history in grades 7 through 12 at some point.
You know, and be honest with you, right now is a tough time based on current political environment and administration about, you look at things that are going to get chopped, or you're looking at things that could be in the chopping block. And humanities, for example, or social sciences, things of that nature, you worry a little bit. But you know something? If gets out, gets the degree, goes back, finds a position teaching, I think, in Pennsylvania, what I was talking to, because I thought about this at one point, go back. What I really want to do, what's a passion, maybe I get a teaching degree. Honestly, I mean, even as where I'm at right now, and they said, well, you're not going to get a job in Pennsylvania. I'm just saying, I'm like, why? She goes, there are more people with teaching degrees in Pennsylvania than in positions, which might just say to us that there's a lot of great school districts, there's a lot of great opportunity in Pennsylvania, but we're getting older. You and I both, as that happens, you get this turnover. So, good for him. So he broke the mold and said, I'm going away from physiology, away from physical therapy. So that's very cool. Where's he going back? Where's his graduate work going to be done?
He's
going to
finish it at Bloomsburg.
Okay, so he's going. So he just graduates, and now was he starting the fall? Or
He's taking some classes now online.
Okay.
And then he'll start in the fall, and it should be done in about a year.
See, and it sounds to me that, and again, I'm learning this. This is something that, you know, when I sit down and do these things, so much comes out. My head starts to spin. You get bits and pieces, and then you get more into the detail. Your work with on the alumni board, I mean, obviously, the networking is having a huge impact. This is not the first time I've heard this, but to know that your connection through, now we're both in the Greek system, and we feel maybe a little superior than to some other people. Sorry. For those people who hear this that are from Bloom or in Greek, you might feel that way. And, the Greek system takes a black eye for being in the undergrads. Some bad things have happened recently, obviously, in Penn State's campus. But that aside, you know, the tremendous amount of networking, the ability, now that you're having second generation, and they're not even Greek, but they got a benefit out of that. I mean, that is absolutely tremendous. Now, you've been involved with, it seems, now, I don't know how much your involvement with the new Bloomsburg president. Mm-hmm. Are you brought back in because of what you did with the alumni? I mean, how do you, because you were, it seems like you were really directly involved with that.
Yeah, so two things. One, after the alumni board, they like to keep people involved. They don't want to let some of these volunteers go, so I volunteered for the College of Liberal Arts advisory panel.
Okay.
And we don't meet as often as the alumni board, but we kind of look at opportunities to, again, do some mentorship, bring in some opportunities for students, whether they be job shadows, and also look at some of the work that they're doing and kind of see how that relates and give some positive feedback. So out of that involvement, plus I'm the father of three students at the time, or three alums, and then my wife is also an alum from Bloomsburg. So we've got lots of Bloomsburg connections, and because I was on campus, I got a call from the vice president of alumni affairs and asked me if I would consider being on the presidential search committee for Bloomsburg University. So Dr. Saltz, who had been the president at the university for 9 years, was retiring, mm-hmm. and they wanted to put together a search committee to find a new president. And it was made up of about 10 to 12 individuals, faculty, staff, council of trustees, members, and two alumni, directly just alumni.
You're one of them.
I was one of them. A foundation board member who actually was an alum. There was other alumni that were on council of trustees that were also, you know, doing double duty. They were a council of trustee member as well as alum. And I kind of put myself in the position of, I'm an alumni, but I'm also the parent of alumni and parent mm-hmm. of a current student. So just bring, how do you bring all that unique perspective together? And I was kind of like, wow, what's involved in that? That's kind of very, it's akin to searching for a CEO. It's really, that's what it is. The president of the university is the CEO. They're in charge of, you know, a lot of the, no, excuse me. Mm-hmm. I just burped there.
No, it's okay. Burping is quite a lot. It's very, hey, it keeps it real.
It's encouraged on the.
It's totally encouraged. We can't be an average amigo. You know, we want everyday Joes. We're not messing around, man. We just got to let the body, you know, do what it's got to do. It's been a long day. So go ahead. So the search committee.
Yeah, so I was invited to be on that search committee. I kind of asked what was involved. Several meetings, several. And again, it's not one of those things you do every year. It's kind of one of those things that happens once in a lifetime or mm-hmm. once every 9 or 10 years. We had one search committee member who was actually on the previous search committee for Dr. Saltz. So that was really helpful to wow. kind of have her background and expertise. But we worked with a search firm mm-hmm. that expertise in finding presidents of universities or in some cases deans or provosts or things along those lines. So they brought obviously a lot of the expertise, did a lot of the heavy lifting and doing the search. But our job was really to look at the folks' resumes, their CVs, kind of whittle things down, determine out of all of these candidates which are the ones we want to bring to the next level, which are the ones do we want to interview in person, which are the ones we want to bring on campus. And so we ended up, that process probably started in, I'm going to say in the fall.
Okay.
And we finished up, the president was announced, the new president was announced, Dr. Hanna was announced on Monday.
Okay. And now this is cool because when I hear interview, I was just going, in my day job, I have to interview, nothing like this. I mean, these are.
No, whole, this was whole, the most unusual.
It's got to be weird.
Yeah,
got to be weird. Was there a panel of 12 interviewing? Well, did you do like group interviews? Did you do one-on-one? I mean, how do you interview someone for? You're looking at a pretty high level position.
Yeah, no, it was really run very, very well.
Okay.
We had a kind of the search chairperson, Mary Jane Bowles, who's a council of trustee member, and is married to a Bloomsburg alum. Kind of really mm-hmm. ran everything very, very well. It's very organized. And the search firm also, this is what they do for a living, mm-hmm. so they're very helpful in advising. But yeah, it's a lot of different points of view. The president is a fundraiser. He's also the spokesperson for the university. He's the face of the university. He's also got to be knowledgeable about union and collective bargaining and shared governance. And there's relationships with athletics, and there's relationships with alumni and donors and town and municipalities and government, and the relationship with Harrisburg, because that's where the funding is. So it was pretty intense, and it also opened my eyes even more to the role that the CEO of the university has and all the different hats they have to wear. And I'll share one story with you from that experience. I was always pleased and excited to see when the president was out meeting with alumni. He would come to the building that I work in. We had an alumni event here, and he came from Bloomsburg, which is about 2.5 hours away, mm-hmm. spoke with alumni, and then I've seen him out at different events out at Valley Forge, at the casino, that convention center out there where we've had several events, and I was like, this is wonderful. The president is out speaking, mm-hmm. he's meeting with alumni, he's talking with donors. But what I didn't realize is perhaps some of the folks that work at the university felt that he was away from campus too many times. So this kind of put it all in perspective for me. Like, wow, I never really thought of that. Mm-hmm. I always thought of it as the opposite. Isn't that great? Whereas mm-hmm. they had a different perspective and different point of view on the president. You know, he's not available. He's not on campus. He's not. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, well, yeah, he's doing this other work over here. So that was just really interesting to hear those different perspectives from the folks on the search committee, and also the folks that came, and we did a lot of listening sessions in, mm-hmm. in understanding what do you as a faculty member, as a student, as an alumni, as a town resident, as a staff member of the university, what do you want to see as your next president? Mm-hmm. And that's really where we got started, is kind of creating the job description and listening into what these constituents, different constituency groups had to say. And you would, we'd have them almost like back to back, and you would just hear like whole different scenarios, like after each other.
He should be this.
Exactly.
She should be that.
Exactly. And you, but you started, for me, it was really eye opening because you got to see the demands that everyone wanted to have. I mean, in an open meeting, one of the president of the CGA, which is the Community Government Association, student government at the university, had expected that the president would attend every single one of the student government association meetings.
Okay.
And I was like, wow, you know, but that was her expectation.
Yeah.
And I was like, wow, but I just heard that the deans wanted to see with meet with them on you know, I was like, wow.
How many days a week are there? How many hours a day?
You need co-presidents to run this institution. So that was very valuable, those open listening sessions where we heard direct feedback from faculty members, staff members, residents, alumni, town members, and you've got different types of faculty and staff. You have different unions represented too. So it was just something I don't deal with on an everyday basis. So,
but that's a huge thing. I mean, where you might go after you're professionalized. We talked a little bit before we started here today, because we're all of a certain age where you're looking at where you're kind of going down the hill, maybe not up it. And if you have the opportunity to have taking care of some things financially, and like you are a little different than I am. Your children now are technically out of the house, hopefully. I'm on the other end of the spectrum a little bit. But you start to say, you know, where, if I can choose not to work, or if I can do something else post career wise, and you're laying a lot of foundation, whether you want to continue to do something like that, whether it's locally or, you know, in the school system. I mean, it's an experience that I'm starting to see is invaluable. I mean, at the very least, you seem to really enjoy being involved. But the fact that of the two of the entire panel that was convened to find the new president, there were two alumni.
Well, there are multiple alumni.
But you were the...
I was the alumni. I was chosen from the Alumni Association to represent alumni. But there were multiple alumni.
Okay, but I mean, still, I mean, to be chosen... To be, you know,
oh, it was a big honor. I mean, I was pretty excited. Yeah,
I was happy.
It was a lot of work. It was very educational. Again, very interesting work. I learned a lot from all of the search committee members as well as the different applicants. I mean, I got to meet potentially, you know, maybe a dozen folks that will be or are presidential material for other universities.
Okay.
So you'll learn something from every one of those interactions. I learned a lot about how to run a meeting. I mean, seriously, the woman who ran kind of our search committee chairperson was fantastic. And I was telling my boss about it today, and just, you know, in a couple of situations where uncomfortable, right? Mm-hmm. And I was like, I would not have handled that well. Mm-hmm. I would not have known how to answer that question. And she just was like, this is what she does. And she just did it. And I was like, wow. I'm like, that's impressive. I'm going to write that down. Like, that was really impressive how you were able to handle that in a very diplomatic way, in a way that no one felt offended, no one felt that they were being shoved aside, and you answered the question. I would not have handled it that way. I would have handled it poorly. And so I was just really impressed with that, and learned a lot about those interactions.
Does this, I mean, in your professional life, do you feel, no names, but in your, as far as people you report to, or people you work with professionally, do they know you do this?
Oh yeah, because I just scheduled some time off.
Okay, so they know what you're doing.
Yeah,
and it's lending. Mm-hmm. Obviously, to get that experience, to get that insight, maps over obviously into your professional life. Yep. And I mean, they're probably looking at you going, hey, we don't have to pay for this. We have to send him to go get a master's or do his other work. He's getting it from free from Bloomsburg. Bloomsburg, woohoo! You know, because, you know, I'm not in that world. My wife is. She does, you know, more of the kind of things you're talking about. You know, and I, you know, again, it's a skill set and you have to build it. And if you don't have that experience, you're getting this amazing, amazing experience. And I won't say, you know, it's free, but it's not. I mean, you're putting your time into it. You're putting your heart into it. So, now we have a new president and you have direct experience, direct contact, because you're the person that's directly involved helping to find and place this person.
Yeah.
So will you, now that your one son obviously is, and you're, I know you're going to stay involved, but I mean, will there continue to be more direct contact with the new president as you had out the prior, because you're not on the board anymore?
I don't know if there'll be direct contact with him. I'm still on the College of Liberal Arts Advisory Panel.
Okay.
I'm still very involved in the Department of Mass Communication and Communication Studies at Bloomsburg University. We're still alum. So we go up there as often as we can for different events. And I have two nieces that are still in school there at Bloomsburg.
So when there's a problem, they call Uncle Ted.
Yeah.
Uncle Ted, got a problem here. Can you put a good word for the president for me? The only difference, when you and I go to homecoming, you're going to be sitting at the president's house.
No, I don't know about that.
But so, there's other people like yourself, and they don't have the same level of contact, I think. You know, there's a guy we've talked about. His name's Dave Dakota. He doesn't mind mentioning his name, and he's going to get on this podcast. But I mean, I see the involvement with the school, and I was out of it for years, and then I got back a little bit on the fringe and the periphery. I've been following you, kind of living vicariously a little bit from your work. But then I went back up there back in the fall for the 50th anniversary, basically
for Greek life. Yeah.
No, I'm coughing. But the university's changed dramatically. But the involvement with the alumni is mind blowing. With some of these folks are involved with, and I'm waiting a little bit more until my children get a little bit older, because I think you need to do that. I'm getting closer and closer. Mm-hmm. They're at the point where they're like, "You can leave us alone now. Go do your own thing. Do your own thing, old man. You know, get out of here." But it's nice because we're so close, proximity wise. We can have that. We can be up there in two and a half mm-hmm. hours.
But there's other opportunities too that you don't have to even be on campus.
Talk about those.
Yeah, so mentoring opportunities.
Right.
Where I've done informational interviews with students over the phone, over Skype.
Okay.
I've had students in where I work for day-long job shadows.
Okay.
There's also a sophomore experiential learning program where they do a 3 to 5 day job shadow. They don't have to be consecutive, but they ask for 3 to 5 days where students can come in and do job shadows. They come to meetings with you. They see how the work environment is. They can sit in on conference calls and ask lots of questions. I was able to introduce them to a lot of folks in our talent acquisition teams, so they can say, what do you look for in a new recent graduate? And they're still sophomores, so they have plenty of time to readjust their thinking or their skill sets or their classwork. And these are things they might not hear from the academics or their counselors or even on the folks at the professional education group.
And I think what was missing, and I would say this about a couple of different things work-wise and in school, some universities, here in Philly, Drexel, for example, you have those internships, right?
Well, they have co-ops, like
co-ops,
like 18-month co-ops. Yeah.
That was something in my professional life that was missing. It's a long story, but I missed out on that, and it hurt me, getting out of the gates professionally. And in Bloomsburg, again, when I went, we didn't seem to have that kind of connection. You know, there was this theoretical thing called, when I was in business management, so you talk about business, you know, this is business, right? And you had this idea, this concept, you read all the books and did all the texts, you went to all the lectures, you know, and I did business policies, you know, that was the coup de grace, you know, senior level course, and you're doing case studies. But then you get to the real world and realize what a difference it can be. So having that direct connection and that contact, and I think there's more of that needed. So how do you, someone like myself, and I'm not completely offering, but I'm just saying, if you know, and if, I think it's come up before, you know, again, my day job is with, I can say it, I'm my day job as a State Farm agent. So shameless plug, but I mean, that's a big organization, obviously. Mm-hmm. We hire a lot of people, and that's how I came to work mm-hmm. the company, from fellow Teak alumni. Yeah. And there's a couple of guys there. We can see these things when we go to our golf outing. But how can, how do you see engaging more people like myself, getting those folks to bring kids in, or bring in undergrads as a mentoring position? I mean, you might have already talked about this before. Maybe it's I missed it. So where do we go? Where do you go to get more alumni to go out there and reach out to? And I know there's an answer, and it's probably already been talked about before. But what are we doing as alumni to be more engaged?
Yeah, so we Alumni Association has lots of events where we try to impress upon alum that there's the opportunities are out there. A lot of it's one-on-one conversations. The folks on the alumni board certainly have those conversations. But certainly on the website, the BloomU alumni website, there's a place where you can sign up and say, this is what I do, this is what I'm interested in, this is what I'm passionate in and about. And I'd be willing to talk to a student about this, and I'm interested in these types of majors. Or you can say, you know, send me whoever.
Okay. Yeah, because I, you know, and I've seen this. It came up once before about, there were like a chat room kind of thing almost came in where kids, undergrads could get in there. And if you have an expertise, you would log in. Of course, I got totally pulled away on something else, mostly probably one of my kids in sports, as you well know, having done that. But I mean, I would like to be more involved. I mean, I think there's so much to offer.
Yeah, a lot of it can just be lessons learned. It can be
and
that's experience. Kind of experience, and and that's, you know, when I talk to current students, again, I'm a mass comm major, but I'm in the business world, and I talk to mass comm majors, and I say, look, you know, if you don't know how to run a spreadsheet, you don't know about a P&L, you don't know CapEx versus OpEx, you're gonna have trouble, or you're gonna be pigeonholed as this person can only do this. And at the company I work for, we hire a lot of folks who are good at critical thinking, they're good at problem solving, and not necessarily good at X, Y, you know, or Z. Not in a very narrow focus.
Okay.
Another example I give is my first job right out of college. I was a television news cameraman for a television station in Atlantic City, New Jersey. And I worked with a guy for many years, and he still works in the television news business. He works at Channel 10 here in Philadelphia. He's a news cameraman, and you know, probably 6 or 7 years ago, went through a reorganization, went through kind of the downsizing, and the folks who could only do camera, the folks who could only write, the folks who could only edit, were the first to go. And because he had those skill sets, he could write, he could edit, he could produce, he could shoot, and he could hold a conversation, he was one of the folks that got to keep his job. And so I think that's happening not just in that industry, it's happening everywhere. And that's what I try to tell, you know, specifically the mass comm students is, you know, learn about those things, talk with people, take a class at Sutliff Hall. Sutliff Hall is our business and marketing building on campus. You know, don't have to take managerial accounting, but you should understand how Excel works and pivot tables and things like that. And even if you don't take a class on it, there's plenty of opportunities on YouTube or free classes that you can watch in your spare time, or even just spend time. When I worked at the TV station, this is going back to the late 80s, but spent time with the salespeople. The salespeople had the nicest cars and the nicest clothes, and they went to the nicest restaurants. And I'm like, I got to find out what's all that about. I'm like, oh, they get a commission on the sales that they make. I'm like, all right. Let me figure out, you know, what's their motivation? How can I understand a little bit about what they do so that I can become a better producer, a better editor, a better person, and understand more about the business of television as opposed to the operations of television. So
that's, you know, that's, and that says a lot about, well, that the idea of your wanting to learn and knowing that you can't just go into for example, I went into Bloomsburg with the business management for my, you know, and then I got out of that, but I was able to, I think the reason why I did that was because it was pulling together all the disciplines. Mm-hmm. So I see people that are just accounting majors, for example. And in this day and age, as you just said, you know, you have to look at things above and beyond that, to communicate properly, to be able to work as a team, to have critical thinking. Yep. And this is amazing information for anybody who happens to listen to this podcast. But generally speaking, you know, we tell our kids every day, you know, don't pigeonhole yourself into one thing, you know, and be broad enough. But the fact that you went and did all that, and had the foresight to see that, to get in the head of the salesman. I mean, obviously, you think salesman, that's what, you know, I sell, but I also manage and, you know, juggle a lot of plates, and you have a lot of disciplines. Yep. And I guess that makes it an interesting thing that I do, but some days, like everything, you sit there and go, I can't spend one more day doing this. So, you know, looking at your kids, for example, let's take that full circle. Now you have three children and obviously two kind of pursuing careers in physical therapy / physiology. So, and your youngest not. So what do you say? I mean, what do they take away from things like that, that you say, hey, look, you know, you need to be able to work a pivot table?
Yep.
Or do they listen? Do they understand that? Do they understand now this is the time where they should be well-rounded?
Yeah, and they don't always just always hear it from me. They hear it from other people as well, which is always a good thing, because sometimes you don't always hear things from your own family.
Never. That my son puts up a wall, goes straight up. I don't see you. I don't hear you. And then when a coach or someone else, but the mentoring thing, and that's the cool part, because, you know, to tell how it is in the real world. And what you're doing professionally, I think, you know, it's very, you know, each person thinks of themselves a little bit differently. I think it's a very dynamic thing. But obviously continue learning. I think that's one of the biggest takeaways I'm getting from some things you've been saying.
And it can be traditional learning. It can be non-traditional learning. There's MBA programs, there's online tutorials. You can get an amazing education, from some accredited universities and institutions without having to pay a nickel.
And that's true. My son is of the YouTube generation, and I was in his room one day, and he was folding all his clothes and putting them back in his drawer. This was short-lived. That doesn't happen now. I go, what are you doing? He goes, Dad, it's a life hack. I go, what do you mean it's a life hack? And he shows me on YouTube, this is how you properly fold everything so you can get more things into your drawers. And I said, uh-huh. So when kids need to learn something, like my son does Adobe, we do Photoshop, and I gave him a project. I said, hey, I want you to design a logo for me. It was just an idea. Just threw it out there, and I gave him a basic sketch. I said, come back, and I went back an hour later sitting on the sofa on his laptop, and I'm like, he goes, don't bother me. Don't bother me. He was there for like 4 hours.
Wow.
What he was doing was every time he needed to learn something in Adobe, he was going out on YouTube and learning what he needed to do.
Just for that time, yeah.
And then, now, is he going to go back and do more of this? I don't know. But what he did was pretty cool. I'm not sure if we'll ever do anything, produce it. But what he, the final product, I went, holy crap, why am I paying anybody to design a logo for me for a podcast? Right. I'm just going to hire this kid, which is kind of cool. We didn't have that. But that's the way their minds work. I'm a little bit concerned thinking that's my son thinks, hey, if I ever have to change a tire, I'm going to need my phone. Or if I ever get lost in the middle of the woods, how am I going to get out of here? I need my phone.
And Wi-Fi.
Why want a good cell connection? Come on now. So, I mean, otherwise, you know, I also wanted to talk to you about two other things. Obviously, your love for photography. You guys have to understand that we, you know, you have this golf outing every year. If you haven't been there, if anybody listened to this, it's a big deal. We've been doing this 20, there's some
it'll
debate.
It'll be 30 years this year, right?
It'll be, I think, 30 years. It all took place, unfortunately, due to a tragedy. One of the fraternity brothers died, and we've had a couple of others, unfortunately, have died since. But, you know, every year, Ted goes out and takes all the photographs of everybody, and it's the highlight of my post. Seriously, it is. But he also, you know, so you've had a love for photography, so it seems like that's a hobby outside of everything. Is it still just something you're doing? Hey, look, I kick it around. I do it when I take pictures of my kids or pick pictures of people parking improperly. I mean, how far have you taken your photography work? I mean, beyond just the hobby side of things, because I mean, what you do is awesome. I mean, and you've gotten into some equipment. So, you know, what else do you do besides just the, you know, random shot of someone?
No, well, I started, I mean, being interested in photography probably was like 8 or 9 years old. I got one of those 126 Instamatic, not Instamatic, but 126 camera with the flash bulbs with actually were bulbs. And
they would burn and, brightly, and then you'd have to throw them on the ground.
And my parents were concerned about the cost, right? Because this is back in the day, you know, I was 10 years old, so this is 1976. Where, you know, you had to buy the film, you had to pay to get it developed, and you had to buy the flash bulbs.
Yep.
And so I was only allowed to use black and white film, I remember, in the beginning.
Because
it was cheaper.
And it's easy to develop.
And it's easier to develop. Develop
yourself.
So I was only allowed to use black and white film, which is funny because I think 10 years later, black and white film became more expensive because of the silver oxides or whatever they use in the chemicals. So, and then just, you know, it was involved in my elementary school yearbook and high school yearbook and just always, you know, loved it. And then when digital photography came, I'm like, this is the best.
Yeah.
I go, I don't have to pay to develop. I don't have to pay for the film. I don't have to pay for the flash bulbs. You just got to recharge everything.
Yeah.
And you're good to go, which also has its, you know, pains because I take a whole lot more photos, but you can afford to, because you can instantly see, okay, that's wrong. As opposed to in the old days, right? Not even that long ago, you would take a picture, you would take a whole roll of 36, two rolls of 36, three rolls of 36, pop them in a little envelope, bring it to your photo mat or mail them away, and then you'd wait a week and they'd come back and you'd find they're all like screwed up. They're out of focus. There's a thumbprint. It's the wrong aperture. It's the wrong.
And if you're not developing yourself, now black and white, so I was saying you could develop those pretty easily, but color processing was a whole different thing.
Yeah. And it wasn't cheap.
You're going to have to go back. Now, Ted, you're I know you've listened to some of the podcasts. Now, go back to the first one with the guy across the street. He's a professional photographer. His new thing is Iceland. And we're going to come back, and we didn't even get a chance to cover Iceland.
Okay.
But what you just said is the thing that is not put him out of business. His thing was, as a professional photographer, and he teaches at the Art Institute here in Philly, that he used to shoot weddings, and that was in portraitures. Big business, mainline stuff, you know, big money. And then digital came in, and then people just said, I'll just hire this anybody who can just pick up a digital camera. That's not totally the case. I mean, I look at the way you compose and what you're looking at. It's the same thing. So you have an eye for this. If you take back when you were under just film, you had to think about those things. You had to think about taking the right aperture, the right speed.
Because it was expensive.
It was expensive to fuck up, man. You screw up, man. It's like, you know, this is getting to be an expensive freaking habit. Or hobby, excuse me. I was looking at, again, the work you're with your kids with swimming, for example, and then the stuff you do at the Teak Open. I mean, it's all about me because I want to see what I look like. You know, like, what's my swing look like? Oh, boy, I'm terrible. But I mean, that is still just more hobby work.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, okay. And I started doing it more once digital came around. My kids were in high school, and my kids were in high school sports, swimming, and then my youngest son ran cross country as well, but all three of the kids swam. And it was also a way for me to not sit in the stands for 2 to 3 or 4 hours. Some of these
swimming events
can go on forever. I've seen t-shirts that say, like, if today is my last day on earth, bring me to a swim meet because it will last forever. So those are the sorts of t-shirts that I would see. And I'm like, and I sit on the concrete or the metal, and I'm like, this is so uncomfortable. And your kid would swim for like a minute and a half, or if it's a 50 yard or 50 meters, it's, you know, 20 seconds or 25 seconds long. So I'm like, all right, I need to be walking around. I need to keep my, you know, arms and legs loose. And so I just, you know, asked the coach, I'm like, would you mind if I'm on the pool deck taking pictures? And he's like, yeah, whatever. And then I would share them with him. He's like, this is amazing. And it was just, you know, and I was like, oh, well, that's cool. I impressed him. I'm like, that's cool. And so I would share it with the kids and the parents. And it was really, you know, kind of, I love doing it for the love of doing it. I don't think I've made more than $100 a year ever doing any photography. I enjoy capturing moments. Some of my favorite pictures from swim meets are not of people swimming. Mm-hmm. They're of the activity that's happening behind the scenes, or the right. parents, or the interactions that the kids have with each other. And I often go through like a whole swim meet. I'm like, yeah, these are the best pictures, and mm-hmm. they're not of anyone swimming. So I enjoy the composition. I enjoy sharing. I've seen, you know, nothing gives me greater reward than, you know, walking into someone's home. I walked into someone's home, and the first thing you see is a 10x20 picture that I took. It's framed. It's matted. And it's hanging on their wall. Like right when you walk in, I'm like, that is pretty cool.
Signed, limited edition. Take this down. Give me a Sharpie. Hold on a second. We'll make this really special. And that's very cool.
That's really cool. And sometimes the photos that I think are the best are not the ones that the parents think are the best. Yeah. And so that's fun too. And it ended up being, I was taking all these photos and I was putting them on a website, and people would say, oh, can you email me this? Can you email me? I'm like, no, I'm not emailing you photos. Here's the website.
Right.
You go find what you need and download what you need in high res and do what you want with it. And I just ask that you don't, you know, use it for an advertisement yep. or, you know, try to sell something with it or resell it or.
But that happens.
Something
that
like that.
Happens.
Yeah,
people pull things off the web and you have to be careful. I mean, I've told my son, I said, dude, you're pulling things down. I forget what he was doing. He was a YouTube channel or something. He was putting these videos together. Video gaming stuff. You can create these videos of your. It basically captures you playing mm-hmm. video. Then he create these logos. Oh, dude, you got to be careful on this, man. I mean, surprised that someone isn't, because you're a minor. They're going to come after
you. Oh, yeah, copyright
me.
Infringement.
Copyright infringement, yeah. brother. I mean, someone wants to get paid for this. So either go on a website where you can buy these. Oh, dad, it's like, oh, my God, they have no idea. Yeah. But it would, and that was cool that you saw the photos. The photo that you walked in saw in this person's house mm-hmm. was one that you put up for them. To take or mean to use,
yeah, yeah.
Right?
Typically, share alike. And typically, they're pretty weird URLs. So
right.
unless you have the URL, you're not going to find them typically.
Right.
But I think it was a football. It was a football photo. Yeah,
okay.
He was the quarterback, and it was a photo that they had downloaded in high res and had blown up and had put up on the wall. And when I was back on campus, I was on the new school store. The temporary home of the school store is on the first floor of the Care Union building.
Okay.
And there's a bunch of photos along the wall. And there's a photo I took of
one
of my daughter's swimmates that's probably 16x20 or 20x40 that's hanging on the wall. And
that's
I'm
awesome.
Like, that's awesome. And so that was also kind of cool, kind of fuels your ego.
Sure.
Because now a lot of my photos had ended up in the local newspaper where we live out in Pottstown, Montgomery County. So they would often send a reporter to cover these events, these swim meets and cross-country meets, but not a photographer because, as we mentioned, sometimes mm-hmm. photographers, there's not kind of a dedicated staff.
Yeah.
And so she would take my photos. I would give them to her. I would email them to the sports photography editor, and they would run sometimes on the front page of the sports section. You get a photo credit. I mean, again,
nice.
No money, but I enjoy doing it. There are a lot of folks I've met that only do it for money, but I have a full time job. I do it for the love of doing it and the love of sharing the videos and the photos that I take. And so I also had a lot of my stuff put on the Bloomsburg University Sports Information website. And some of their materials. So just been fortunate to be in the right place at the right time. I was able to, and again, talk about relationships and kind of who you meet. My daughter was fortunate to, she's a fast swimmer, and mm-hmm. she made it to the NCAA Division II championships out
wow.
in Indianapolis, Indiana, for a couple of events. And it was a pretty big deal. And I got myself an NCAA Division II deck pass at the swim meet through the university, which was great. And so basically, you know, I was there to see my daughter,
mm-hmm.
but I was there to quote unquote work as well, because I had deadlines. I had to get photos back, and I had a problem with one of my lenses. The lens jammed, and I was like,
oh the motor.
Yeah. And I'm like, mm-hmm. I cannot be here. My daughter is swimming. Like, I'm here. I got to get this fixed. So after the preliminaries went, Indianapolis has a great camera shop, Roberts Camera Shop. Ran over there.
Shameless plug. No, not for you. Or
no,
them.
But it's a great story. So I went there and I looked about buying a lens, renting a lens, looking at the options, and it's expensive. I mean, the lens I ended up replacing.
Oh yeah.
Was my wife says how much did that cost? I'm like, I'm not going to tell you till we're done, but it was close to $1,000 the lens that I ended up buying, because it's a zoom lens, and it went from like 0 to 600, and it's a lens you need for a swim meet.
Sure.
And
sure.
So I looked at renting, I looked at buying, I bought it. And I was talking to the guy, the salesman, and he says, what are you in town for? Like, why do you need this lens? Like right now you're from Pennsylvania, that's weird. You're buying a lens in Indianapolis, what's going on? So I explained, he goes, oh, do you know, have you met Peter Beck? I said, no, I don't know who that is. Oh, he's over there all the time. He's the photographer for the university. He's anything that goes on at that arena, he is the photographer. Mm-hmm. I go, I don't know who he is. And he showed me his picture. He pulled up the website and showed me. I go, oh, I saw that guy in the corner. Awesome. Tell him that James says hello. I'm like, all right, I will do that. So I walked over, you know, introduced myself to him. He is the chief photographer for Swimming World magazine.
No way.
He travels around the world, the Olympics, all of the major events around the world for swimming and other sports as well. Mm-hmm. And I introduced myself to, I didn't know that at the time, introduced myself to him. I finally figure out, I'm like, oh my gosh, this is a, this is a serious guy here. Mm-hmm. He took some wonderful photos of my daughter, which he would not have done because she was not in the top three. I mean, she's fast, but she's not winning at
hundreds
the NCAA.
Hundreds of a second there. Come
so
on.
He took some fantastic high-res photos of my daughter, which, again, would never have had. He also asked me about, he goes, hey, what are you doing right now? I'm like, nothing. Want to go up there? He points to the ceiling. There's a catwalk above the top of the university, atop of the swimming pool for backstroke. Took me up to through the catacombs of, this is IUPUI, Indiana University, Purdue, where they had this meet. Took us up to the catacombs, to these back closets and corners, and walk up there. I'm like, this is amazing. Mm-hmm. And again, never would have happened had I not had the camera lens break, had the right salesman at the right place at the right time. And I have these amazing, my daughter doesn't swim backstroke, but I took some wonderful, amazing portfolio pictures for me of looking straight down on backstroke, which is really difficult to ever do because you're never really above the pool looking straight down. I am petrified of heights. So, but that was just an amazing opportunity. And I'll have to show you the photos, but we were up so friggin' high. And he's just dancing around up there because this is his domain. Mm-hmm. I felt like I needed to have like the safety chain attached to me.
I was
going to
say,
times.
Did they harness you? Or no. So if you fall, oh well.
I had a couple rules. He said the camera needs to be around your neck at all times.
Yeah.
Everything out of your pockets, because you could kill someone if something were to fall out, let alone disrupt the race. Disrupting the race is the least of your problems. You could seriously cause damage. Around your neck at all times, everything out of your pockets, everything else outside the door. Mm-hmm. If you want to change your lens, go outside the door, change your lens and come back in. So, but I got some, a really amazing photo. My wife has a picture of me too, of all the way up.
Taking a photo of you all the way up there.
Because I took a picture of her and texted it to her. And she's like, what? Where are you? And she's like, took a picture of me up there. She's like, oh, there's this little tiny dot in the upper corner of this. But I tell that story because... And also tell it to students because it's all about opportunity. It's all about who you meet and how to make the best of a situation. Here I was out $960, but I'm now LinkedIn friends with Peter Beck, who's one of the best craftsmen in swimming and sports photography as well as nature photography. I get to see a lot of his work on Facebook, and just a chance meeting, a chance opportunity. Where now I've got great work for my portfolio and just, amazing, amazing opportunity.
And you never know where paths might cross again. You never know what other opportunities might open up. You never know if you felt, hey, look, I really have a question I need to ask, or, I got to pick your brain on something, and if you've made a connection, it's weird. I mean, I think, you've got, and I'm the same way. I think if you chat people up, if you just find out what's going, you know, my wife gets mad at me all the time. She's like, you know, would you shut, I mean, you know me, I probably can talk to, I can definitely talk too much. Well, this is awesome. I love listening. So I'm sitting back and I learned to listen. Shut up, Chuck. But I think if you, you know, just talk to people. And you never know when things are going to happen. But like you said, you know, you went in and bought a lens, talked to the guy, told me you're doing. He said, and it's, you know, it maybe was meant to be. Maybe it's divine providence. I don't know. I'm starting as older, I get kind of wonder if you put it out there or you think it or you know, or just open your mind to things, you know, then things happen. Mm-hmm. And maybe they do happen for a reason. But it's cool that you got to do those things, and you now, obviously, this guy might pass through town. Who knows? Maybe he says, I'm going to be doing something here in Philadelphia. Mm-hmm. And you say, hey, come on my way. I'll show you around. And, you know, hey, you got these are about making the whole thing I'm getting, you know, I think the theme here, you're developing so many more connections than a lot of people I know. Yours truly. I mean, that was your intention. I mean, it's kind of a byproduct of what a lot of things that you're doing professionally and personally and putting yourself out there. You know, and it's commended, commendable. I don't do enough of it sometimes, and I want to do more. I got to be, you know, everybody has their limitations in the sense that you got to focus on those things that are the priorities in your life. But I mean, and that was, you kind of hit two birds with one stone, because I was going to ask you about your children and swimming and photography work, and you hit both of those. Now that, you know, obviously swimming's not a professional career, but I mean, what are your children, do they see themselves staying involved in the ones, you know, for as far as your daughter swimming, for example, or any other athletics, do they have any post-college life with that? Mm-hmm. I mean, maybe coaching? I mean, I don't know.
My daughter right now, she's the middle child, and she is in a master's program as far as swimming is concerned.
Oh, really?
So they have, just so she can practice with people at the YMCA, yeah.
Okay.
They have meets too. I don't think she's done any meets, but she's also done some coaching for the water polo team at the area high school. She's doing that now.
Did she ever play water polo?
She played water polo all through high school. Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah, not all through high school, the last 2 or 3 years.
Real water polo, not like what we played in Centennial.
Yeah,
remember that? When you got the one end, it was up, you can stand. That was cheating. The other half, you had to swim. But water polo is an amazing, you mean the stamina, the amount of physicality that goes on, people don't realize. They just see it played in the Olympics once every 4 years.
And she did that. And my oldest son did water polo as well in order to get stronger and be in the pool, be in the water for swimming, for the swim season.
Did all three swim or just the two?
All three swam.
Okay.
The two oldest did water polo.
Okay.
And my youngest ran cross country.
Right. You mentioned
in high school, and he ran a year at Bloom. Yeah.
Wow. Yeah, you know, I've got friends now whose children, my daughter should be a track. She should go into track. She could do a lot of things. She's got long legs and she's very fast. My son did swimming, and he didn't want to compete. He was a weird kid that way. And I'm sorry, Luke, nothing to say, you're a weird kid. But I mean, he's just a little strange. You know, the competitive side of him is a little bit coming into its own now. But but these are sports that
swimming you can do forever.
I was going to say you can swim forever and you can be involved athletically with track to some degree.
Yeah, but track you still have you got knee issues, you can strain on your muscles and your tendons and your bones, whereas swimming it's a lot low impact opportunity, low impact sport. So
my wife's one cousin's daughter swam. One dove and one swam. Went to, I think, Notre Dame, but shoulder injuries. And maybe it's backstroke. It was one of her top events, but she had to do surgery. I mean, she pulled her bad, man. I mean, like major surgery. Yeah. So there is some injury time with swimming, but not as much as any other sport. And once it heals, you get to swim the rest of your life.
Yeah, I mean, you can swim forever, really. I mean, if you wanted to.
If you want to.
And there are some people that do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, listen, and we keep these things wrapping up in about an hour. We're past the hour at this point.
Oh, my goodness.
I know. Time is flying. And, dude, this has been fantastic. I'm going to start to wrap it up here. And we're going to do this again. And we're going to try to develop some more into group setting, get a couple other guys here, do a roundtable. But fascinating. And I want you to... keep coming out. Do this again.
Sure.
And I really do appreciate you spending the time to
fun.
To get us up to speed. And I really want to thank you for your time, dude.
Absolutely.
All right,
thank
man.
Thank you.
Take care.